Welcome into another edition of the Dane and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I'm Rick. I'm with Dan. We are at Madison Square Garden once again, where Dan, it finally happened. Xavier got up big in the first half. The Musketeers led by as many as 17 in this game. And in the second half, we had the typical Xavier zone comeback, as you would say. Providence made it a game. They tied it up. They took the lead at times. It went into overtime, and then they win by outscoring Xavier 7-4 in overtime. The final score, 75-72. Providence Friars win. Xavier knocked out of the Big East tournament in the semifinals, which for one means they won't play Villanova again in the finals, but it also means finally this lack of being able to close teams out or put them away when they have a big lead on them caught up to them and actually cost them a game. Your initial takeaways, what was kind of your first thought after that game ended?
Well, I mean, I think that's exactly right. Xavier was 10-0 in games decided by 6 points or less this season. They did that in some cases by overcoming large deficits in the second half, often to teams that were far inferior to them. You had East Tennessee State was up 22 points, the Cintas Center, DePaul was up 16. And then you had a lot of other games where Xavier, as you say, held a lead of a dozen or so points and kind of like a cat batting a ball of yarn, just sort of played it out for a few minutes and then all of a sudden let the other team make it a close game. So this felt like it was in the post a little bit with this team. You can't play with fire that many times and get away scot-free. But yeah, I mean, the thing that's probably the most difficult is to look at the fluid, fast-paced, attractive basketball that Xavier played in the first half of this game and then compare it to the second half, where offensively they were turgid, they were slow, they made bad decisions. I don't even know. I mean, as you watched it happening, you knew what was happening because the momentum was obviously, it was one-way traffic from about the 15-minute mark of the second half. But still, it's like how can this Xavier team play so badly offensively? And it would be easy to say they just didn't make shots, which is true. They shot 29% in the second half, 8 of 27 from the field, 1 of 6 in overtime. Some of those were makeable, some of them were not. But I think ultimately it was just a full team meltdown down the stretch. I don't think you can say it any other way.
Yeah, and first of all, hashtag turgid. Second of all, you're right. You can say Xavier missed shots, but this wasn't a case like, for instance, I think back to the Seton Hall game when everyone got all worried because Seton Hall scored 60-something points in the second half, and it was a big deal. And Xavier still won that game by double digits, I think. But Seton Hall got hot and started hitting threes. Providence did not get hot
in
this game.
They were 19 from three.
And they were 0-4-8 after halftime from three-point range. So it's not like they just started tossing in some threes and made an improbable comeback. This was a game where Xavier let them come back into it pretty much at their own pace. I don't have the final tally, but I know with about 40 seconds left in overtime, Xavier played 35 possessions in the second half. With 40 seconds left in overtime, they had only reached 32 possessions. So that's almost 24 some odd change worth of play there after halftime, and they weren't even, still three possessions behind the pace they played at in the first half. To me, that's the biggest difference. This team slowed it down because they had a bad lead. They lost their pace. They lost their swagger on offense, and they couldn't regain it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think if you want to pinpoint, the major issue, I mean, you have to look no further than the fact that Xavier's best player was 2 of 14 from the field. And after halftime was a complete non-factor. He got to the line a few times, which is something that Trayvon has done this season when he hasn't been able to hit jump shots. He's found ways of contributing. But, I mean, Trayvon Blewett shoots 2 of 14, Xavier's not going to win a game. And maybe they get away with it against a Georgetown or a DePaul or a St. John's. But yeah, they're not going to beat a quality team with Trayvon shooting 2 of 14 from the field.
Yeah, 2 of 14 from the field, 1 of 7 from three-point range. But most importantly, Dan, a wide open layup in regulation that would have won the game. Another wide open layup, well, not as wide open, but still a layup he makes every 10 out of 10 times except for that one in overtime that could have, I guess, not necessarily won the game, but was a critical juncture.
The one in regulation was puzzling because Najee Marshall steals the ball. They get it ahead. He's effectively by himself under the basket shooting a left-handed layup, and he just leaves it short. And I can't fathom, honestly, watching it live. It was kind of one of those, it was like a horror movie. You watch it live and it slows down and you're like, oh, that seems normal. But when you think about it now, it's like the dude had a wide open layup with 12 seconds left to win the game and he just missed. And it's hard to believe from a guy of his pedigree. And then I don't understand why, you know, Najee Marshall got the offensive rebound, let's not forget, and tried to stick it back.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, should have pulled that back out.
So it's hard to fault guys for making errors that look easier in the sort of cold light of day. You look back at it and you say, yeah, you should have just taken the ball down and run some time off the clock. It's easier to say that than it is when you're in the action, but honestly, Xavier played really stupidly, I thought, both at the end of regulation and at the end of overtime, and frankly, they kind of got what they deserved.
The thing that stands out to me about this loss is when you think about the things that have gone wrong for Xavier this season, whether it be in losses or the games where people got nervous because they got too close for their liking and Xavier played poorly in the second half or at the end of games, most of those games, it was like Xavier shot poorly from three or the other team shot really well from three. Or it was Xavier turned the ball over way too much. There were just different things that really stood out. This game, you don't have that. Like, Xavier had 10 turnovers. That wasn't the issue. Providence was 3 for 19 from 3, while Xavier was 5 of 22. Neither team shot it all that well from 3, but they didn't get outpaced from the perimeter. And the free throw line is the other big one that I was forgetting before. Providence was 16 of 20 from the free throw line. Xavier 17 of 18 at the free throw line. So they didn't lose the game there either. So I guess I look at this one, and this is like the first time that Xavier just wasn't good enough. Flat out wasn't good enough. They just lost the game.
They out-rebounded him. I mean, it's hard to comprehend. And some of the stuff, I mean, Paul Scruggs, I think we have to, you know, we can accentuate the positives here. I mean, Paul Scruggs was terrific, particularly in the first half, but he didn't do a lot after halftime, frankly.
True. He had a career-high 15 points.
Kaiser Gates, who was superb yesterday, was a cipher today. Sean O'Mara, again, struggled to finish. Quentin Gooden, a little bit of a brain fart on the last possession, but honestly, when you're down 3 points with 10 seconds left, what really can you expect? I don't know, Rick. I mean, it's tough to countenance how this team can score 29 points in 25 minutes of basketball.
I would have never thought that was possible.
And I don't know that you really need to take it any further than that. Now, should JP have gotten a block foul at the end of the game instead of a charge? I mean, with the ridiculous rule that exists, I think it's the right call, given the way they interpret it in basketball now. I think it's stupid.
Yeah.
That's the way it's interpreted.
I still thought it was a bad call. I thought the guy had both of his arms out. I thought he was completely under the rim. Whatever. I mean, like you said, it is what it is. At that point of the game, you put the game in the ref's hands, it's going to go one way or the other.
Yeah,
it didn't go
your
way that time.
You give a guy a chance to dance around and decide a game at Madison Square Garden and make himself the star of the show on TV.
Right. I think we both agree, though, the officiating wasn't the difference in this game at all.
And there, unfortunately, is another example of bad decision making down the stretch because Quentin Gooden's wide open for a layup.
Yeah, he could have dropped that off to Quentin and Quentin would have dunked it in probably.
And Xavier would have led by a point with 7 seconds left effectively.
Yeah, it would have completely changed the game. No question about that. I guess when I look at this though, I mean, it's a situation where you lost in Madison Square Garden in the semifinals of the Big East tournament in overtime. It happens. It's not, in terms of like the overall landscape, it's not a big deal. And I guess I would say that your biggest concern as a Xavier fan is that this defense isn't good enough to really make a run. Defense was not the issue this whole weekend. Their defense was really pretty darn good. Now, was it great in the second half? No, they let Providence score 39 points, but that wasn't what lost them the game. As you stated, what lost them the game was scoring 29 points over the course of 25 minutes of play.
Providence shot 55% from the field in the second half, but I will say that Kyron Cartwright, who's a really good player, made some very, very difficult finishes, were part of that. But you know what? Also part of that was easy baskets because Xavier made stupid decisions on offense and turned the ball. They turned the ball over eight times in half in the second half in overtime, and they let Providence attack downhill. And that's, you know, when you're sitting there up 17 points with 15 minutes left, the one thing that you do not want to do is allow a team to attack you downhill, right, to get some momentum going. And they instantaneously gave up eight straight points and made it a game with 12 minutes left in the game. So, I mean, Xavier's got nobody but themselves to blame for this, because this was a game that they could have managed through those last three wars and won. Couldn't do it. It's the first time this year that this has happened. You know, they're still 28-5. There's no reason to panic. But it's disappointing because it would have been great for these guys. It would have been good for the team to have a chance to win a Big Ten, to win the Big East tournament, to add to the regular season championship.
Do you take any solace in the fact that it wasn't the defense that gave it away, that it was the offense, just because you would assume that the offense is going to fail them like that again? Or does it not matter to you at all?
I don't think it matters. I really don't think it matters. I mean, I think it just it's difficult to. Yeah, I mean, you're right from the perspective of, yeah, Xavier's defense isn't what caused this. But by the same token, I mean, it's the same dudes playing offense and defense. It's not like it's not a squad game. So, I mean, I guess the question is, what does this do from a seeding perspective? Does a collapse like this, call it what it is, does that hurt them worse than if they'd played even up with Providence for 40 minutes and lost by 3 points? I think it has to.
Really? You do?
I think it has to. I mean, psychologically, because of recency bias, I mean, this is the last game that people will have seen from Xavier.
That's true. And it's a nationally televised game that people were theoretically watching if you're on the selection committee.
That being said, it's 3% of the season. So it shouldn't play more into the decision-making process, but I mean, human beings, they tend to remember the last thing they saw. And I think that Xavier blowing a 17-point lead in the way they did, I think, confirmed some maybe reservations that people had about this team.
That's fair. That's fair to say, I think. There's also that whole storyline that I really didn't even have on my radar until I contacted some bracketologists. And basically, if you read what I wrote earlier today before this Providence game, what happened was, before the tournament started, I had emailed basically the 14 top ranked bracketologists on Bracket Matrix, which they rank for the last 5 years, who is the most accurate. I emailed all those guys or DM'd them on Twitter and just asked them, basically, do you think X already has a one seed locked up? If not, what do they need to do to clinch one? Sort of, where do you see them right now? Out of the 14, I think, or out of the 14, five didn't respond. I got nine responses. I think five of them said if they win one game, they've absolutely got a one seed locked up. All four of them said the same exact thing to me, which was that they thought worst case scenario for Xavier was getting to the finals and losing to Villanova for a third time, saying that even if they got those two wins in the Big East tournament, that wouldn't do enough for the resume, that the committee would be more turned off by losing to the same team three times had they lost to Villanova in the finals. So from that perspective, there is this theory, which I kind of agree with you, maybe losing the way they did hurt them more than anyone would have anticipated, but there's also that theory out there that had they lost to Villanova for a third time, that would have cost them a one seed.
So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting theory. I, as I said last night, I don't put a whole lot of credence in it. I think the bigger issue for X at this point is you have two teams in Villanova and Virginia that are locked in at this point. I think we both would agree.
Yes.
And then there's two more number one seeds available. There's Xavier, and then there's two of the most successful blue blood programs in college basketball that are still hanging out there with a chance to win conference championships. Duke's going to play North Carolina in a matter of minutes. By the time most of you hear this, that game will be over. North Carolina wins. Maybe this isn't an issue, and I actually think North Carolina is better than Duke. So,
I do not. I would say this. I think Duke has changed the team that they are. They're playing slower. They are playing through Marvin Bagley more instead of playing through the rest of their talented guys. And that has changed them. Their pace is different. Their defense is different. And they've identified their strengths much better. It's Marvin Bagley one, right, and Grayson Allen is a secondary option.
I guess I view Carolina's talent as I just think that they have a veteran team. It's been through the wars a few times, and I think they'll win tonight. Edit that out when they lose by 20. But yeah, so you have Duke on the one hand, then you have Kansas. Kansas, obviously in the Big 12 tournament, that's going to be very difficult. I know they had Kansas State. I assume they beat Kansas State, so they're going to be in the final. You know, West Virginia is a team that's given them a run a couple times. But yeah, if Kansas is the Big 12 tournament champion and Duke is the ACC tournament champion, is there a sense that the Blue Blood programs would get the nod over Xavier? And I think it's a fair question to ask.
It might put Xavier in a position, though, if they're the top two seed, which I think everyone would agree, no matter what, the worst case scenario is the top two seed, where they will not be in the same region as Duke.
Or Villanova.
Well, and they can't be in the same region as Villanova.
So it'd be Virginia or Kansas.
And theoretically, I think those are two of the best options to have. Now that's thinking down the road. That's assuming Xavier makes it to the end of the region.
Now there's a lot of games to be played between then and now.
And there can be plenty of matchup problems in between then. But I think if you're looking for the best matchup out of the one or two seed lines, those are the two teams Xavier probably wants to play.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I think it would be a little bit disappointing from the standpoint of, it would have been kind of cool for Xavier to get a one seed.
They've never had one.
Yeah. But does it make that big of a difference? Probably not. I mean, maybe they don't get Nashville. Maybe they have to go someplace. Maybe they go to Pittsburgh instead of Nashville. But maybe they're in the Los Angeles region instead of Omaha. But ultimately, I think, you know, 10 minutes after the game ends, I guess what I'm coming back to is the mantra, better now than next week, right?
Of course. And again, it's you're in your conference tournament, which is always a little wonky and weird things happen. You lose a game in overtime. There's nothing to apologize for. This isn't necessarily an indictment on Xavier's team. I think the reason it feels worse to a lot of Xavier fans than a normal loss might have is because they've seen that Xavier gets a lead, they let a team come back, and now it finally cost them. They'd just seen that script so many times without it costing Xavier. Now it finally did. I think it kind of felt like an inevitability at some point. But as you said, it's much better that that inevitability plays out this week instead of next. Let me ask you a question real quick. Would you rather have Xavier trailing by 15 points in the first half or winning by 15 points in the first half at this point?
It's becoming a very serious question. I mean, I was in like, you know, as they say on One Shining Podcast, I was kind of in Bob Huggins up 18 at halftime mode, like smoking cigarettes and drinking Miller Genuine Drafts and just like shaking hands, giving out pullovers at halftime. I mean, Xavier played really well in the first half. It was one of the best halves of basketball they played all year. But as has been the case with this team, I think when they pushed it back to 10 with about 7 minutes left, that was a spot where a couple stops, couple baskets go in, it's over. But they couldn't do it. They did it yesterday, but they couldn't do it today.
I'm to the point where I firmly believe this team is so bad at playing with a lead because you have to slow down. If you're up by 15 in a game, you have to slow down.
They should. I don't think they should.
I agree.
I think it's been demonstrated at this point that when they try to artificially change what they're doing because they're ahead in a game, that it's a negative for
but
them.
There's no argument that happened, right?
Like, oh, that's absolutely not.
Yeah, and that
it
to
happened
me,
from the second McCura hit the three to make it a 17-point game. They went into Mick Cronin burn offense mode.
And that's not who this team is.
No.
And the biggest problem with that is not just that it cost them however many possessions they're playing like that for, but the biggest problem I see is this team is such a momentum team offensively. They build off of their confidence and
exactly,
their flow
yeah,
and their
absolutely.
Swagger and everything else, that once they lose that, it's really hard to get back in that flow.
Shout out to Butler, who right now is down 16 to nothing in the other semifinal.
The precious pups, not
Holy
looking
God.
Good. But Dan... It's the classiest 16-0 run I've ever seen given up.
They've escorted Villanova players to the basket in the classiest possible
way. Well, how many times have they helped them up after Villanova scored? That's the real question.
Good gravy.
That's the way you really keep track of a Big East game.
So, Rick, going back to the game, I mean, as you look at this, were there any weaknesses from Xavier? Okay, so there's two things we've talked about all year. Small guards can get in the lane and score against them. The second thing is, when they play with a lead, they pucker up. Is there anything else that came out of this game that concerns you, or is it just, this is Xavier, this is who they are?
No, there's not, and that's the thing. Like, I think it would be easier, I think people would feel better about it in terms of the fans. I think it would be easier for me to sit here and explain it if there was that, like, well, they turned the ball over 15 times, or they couldn't guard some random dude off the bench who went off for 25. But that's not the case. It was that, you know, Alpha Diallo had 17. He's one of their best players. Ronnie Bullock had 17. He's one of their best players. Kyron Cartwright had 15. He's one of their best players. You know, Nate Watson had 14. He was 5 of 6 from the field and 4 of 6 from the free throw line. That's a bit of an outlier performance, but I didn't feel like that was...
When you look at it, because we've got the first half stats and the game stats in front of us, and there's nobody that went off in the second half. There's nobody that went off.
No.
It just is, they played a little bit better. They played marginally better in a lot of different ways. I mean, I don't think, it's like you said, it would be one thing if Providence was spraying threes all over people, but they didn't hit anything in the second half.
And there were mistakes made by Xavier, and certainly their offense fell apart in the second half, but it wasn't that... There's not that one thing that you can blame it on. I think they just got flat out beat in the second half and overtime of that game. And I think that's the most unsettling part of it for Xavier fans probably right now. Other than that, I don't think there's much more explaining away we can do
with
this game.
There's not a whole lot else to take away from it. I mean, they got a big, they got stagnant, and they lost. And they, you know, maybe... Is there an argument that this is the punch in the face that this team needs to kind of like get recentered, given that they've lived on the edge all year?
Maybe, but I'm not buying it. Like, yeah. Not with this group, you know? Like, they've had too many wake-up calls or whatever else you want to see, and I don't think it's necessary. I mean, it is an indictment on them, but we also know who they are. Like,
right.
You expect this. You also expect normally they will pull themselves out of these situations and be fine. And I also think in the NCAA tournament, other than maybe that first round game with a 15 or a 16 seed, depending on where they're seated,
right,
they're not going to have 17-point leads in the first half more than likely. So I just don't think this is really an issue that's going to affect them in the NCAA tournament. I do think maybe they were a little tired after fighting with St. John's in the locker rooms and have to worry about Bashir Ahmed showing up at their hotel rooms the rest of the night. Maybe it was just fatigue playing out.
Shout out to the Big East. Shout out to the security cameras at Madison Square Garden.
Can we think for a minute about Val Ackerman sitting, Stu Jackson and Val Ackerman sitting in some fortress watching the replay of the security videos here at Madison Square Garden?
I have my doubts. But
because that's what they said. They said they were reviewing the security film.
So I guess let's close with this. Obviously it's a disappointment that Xavier fell apart today and couldn't complete this game and get to the final. But this is 3% of the season. It's not that big of a deal. And X is still gonna move into the NCAA tournament as a 1 or 2 seed.
Yeah. I mean, there's not much to complain about if you're a Xavier fan other than tonight's game kind of sucks.
Yep.
I would say.
I think you can close it right there.
All right, you've been listening to another edition of the Dane and Victory podcast. Guys, I think we might try to record one more thing if you guys have questions for us or if you want to throw stuff out to us, some topics, stuff like that. We can record one more maybe at a bar tomorrow or something like
and
that.
And hopefully by then Butler will have scored.
That does it for this edition of the Dane and Victory podcast. For Dan, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.